A horse statue with a plaque that reads Lexington 1850 to 1875.
In a Kentucky mall, you can meet a very famous taxidermy bear.
This is my first time seeing the cocaine bear.
The what bear?
Yes, the cocaine bear.
There's a reason why he's called the cocaine bear.
This story is amazing.
A package parachutes into some woods. A bear growls.
One day in the woods, a bear finds a huge bag of drugs.
And the bear got high.
The cocaine was 95% pure.
No, really. They found him laying there with the cocaine around him.
A man plants his cane.
That's a very interesting story in itself.
But this is the origin story of the cocaine bear, featuring the larger-than-life man who started it all.
He was mercurial and mysterious. He had lived on the edge.
He had a James Bond wristwatch that shot tear gas.
These are Kentucky blue bloods that got together to go into full-time smuggling.
He was a bad dude.
It's such a powerful story. It has corruption. It has murder.
Judge John Wood was fatally wounded by a single gunshot.
Drugs, murders, gun running, you name it.
Holy crap, you would never believe it. But it did actually happen.
Believe it or not, this story even has cows on drugs.
Oh, come on.
This is the true story of the cocaine bear.
You wouldn't forget it, let's put it that way.
A black and white photo of a bear wearing a hat. Words appear, Peacock Original. Titles appear, Cocaine Bear, the true story. In North Georgia.
The backwoods of the Chattahoochee National Forest in North Georgia are stark and remote. In December 1985, a hunter finds something here that sparks a legend.
A woman in her 60s.
This legend has grown into be quite a story.
On the red carpet.
And in 2023, that legend is brought to life by an incredible movie.
A bear snarls at a human.
And soon the whole world is talking about it.
Number one trend on Twitter, everyone's talking about this.
A TV interview.
A bear did cocaine.
This will be the winner of the decade, probably.
Cocaine bear, Fran, take one. Mark?
An interview with a blonde 60-something woman.
Well, my name is Frances Bishop Wiley, and then December of 1985, I was an assistant special agent in charge of the Georgia Bureau of Investigation in Gainesville, Georgia, and right now I'm retired. I received a call at the office from a game warden in Fannin County, Georgia, and he advised that a hunter had found a bear in the woods on a mountain and that there was a parachute and a duffel bag close by. I had dispatched two of my agents to the scene. They radioed back and advised me that there indeed was a bear, parachute, and duffel bag. So I said, well, this is very strange. I mean, very odd that we would even find something like this. I told them to take it to the Georgia Crime Lab in Atlanta, and they did take the duffel bag and found residue of cocaine on it. There was no cocaine in the duffel bag, so where did the cocaine go? Well, the bear ate it.
At night, a prop plane passes over a city. A man wearing a helmet and goggles steadies himself. Words appear, Knoxville, Tennessee, September 1985.
The bizarre story of this bear and what happened actually begins 3 months before.
A flash of yellow through a window.
In the middle of the night, a Knoxville resident is awakened by a sound from his backyard.
It wasn't until the next morning that he looked in his driveway.
Charles Stitus.
And immediately called the police.
A man with white collar-length hair sits down.
My name is Jimmy Jones. I'm a retired Knox County Sheriff. From the time I was 16 years old, I knew I wanted to be in law enforcement. We were just in the office that day. It was a normal day, just like any other day. The call came in from dispatch. He was an elderly gentleman, and he said that there was a gentleman out in his driveway who was trespassing, and if the police didn't come, he would take care of it himself.
A photo of the trespasser on the ground with an open parachute.
The trespasser is the dead body of a skydiver, and JJ is called to the crime scene.
Wearing a blue jumper and a pair of black and white brogues, Jimmy strides down a street as a plane soars overhead.
This is a very quiet community. Usually there's very little crime, very little happens. When we arrived on the scene, the individual was found in the gravel driveway area between the houses.
A TV newsreel of officers at the scene.
We were surprised to see this individual here. His parachute was kind of wadded up beside him like it hadn't fully opened. The gentleman was deceased. There was a duffel bag that was hooked to the individual. The duffel bag contained somewhere between 30 and 40 packages marked USA. All of them were labeled the same way. We knew when we cut into it, it was still moist and the smell would just hit you in the face. And it was a very high quality of cocaine.
Archive footage of Jimmy investigating the scene.
Somewhere between 30 and 40 kilos of cocaine. It was probably worth hundreds of millions. I was amazed. And I was just a kid. I mean, I wasn't but 24, 25 years old. I had never seen anything like that. It was like, holy crap, you know, this you would never believe this happened in sleepy little old Knoxville, Tennessee. We continued to look at the body to evaluate it.
There was at least one attack knife along with some daggers or spears that were actually in a sheath on his arm. Night vision goggles. There was about $5,000 in U.S. currency. They were precious and semi-precious stones in a money belt.
He had some gold Krugerrands. Nobody knew what a Krugerrand was. We heard of them, but nobody actually, I don't even think anybody had ever seen them. They were gold, and they have like a little kangaroo or an animal on the front.
A Krugerrand gold coin with a springbok on it.
Initially, we had no clue what had happened.
None of this is making sense for JJ and his team. Who is this guy in the driveway?
Some questions that really haven't been answered. He was mysterious. He looked a lot like a soldier of fortune.
He had a 9mm Browning high power pistol that was loaded with Teflon coated 9mm bullets. Those are the bullets that will penetrate a bulletproof vest. He also had a wristwatch that was like a James Bond wristwatch, but it wasn't one that you would get out of a cereal box. It was actually a high-quality watch that shot tear gas. I was amazed every time something came off his body, piece of equipment or whatever it was. I mean, it was just more and more and more. He also had some very expensive shoes.
And an odd fact that a lot of people noted at the time, he was wearing Gucci loafers.
Charles, producer of the Fly By Night podcast, shrugs. Jimmy.
I mean, we were still trying to put pieces together. We really didn't have anything. Then, as more agencies became involved, we ultimately found out that the plane had crashed in North Carolina.
Words appear. Haysville, North Carolina, a news report.
The wreckage of the Cessna 404 is still scattered across this ridge of the Nantahala Mountains.
We did hear that a body had been found in Knoxville of someone who parachuted out of a plane, and evidently the parachute didn't open. At this time, it kind of appears that that may be involved with this.
The location of the plane in North Carolina is more than 100 miles from the body of the mysterious parachutist. The aircraft provides a vital clue. It's registered to a man from Lexington, Kentucky.
The three locations span neighboring states.
In Lexington, the information filters down to the local papers.
A man with floppy brown hair takes a seat. Words appear, Michael York.
I was a investigative reporter at the Lexington Herald Leader in Kentucky from about 1979 to 1987.
A man studies a driver's license.
The body was identified as Andrew Thornton, and that erupted the newsroom at the time.
A photo of a handsome mustachioed man.
Drew Thornton was someone who had been in a position of authority, a police officer, who came from privilege, was a soldier, you know, been wounded in combat.
Personally, I wasn't all that surprised when I heard that he was dead in Knoxville in a driveway, having fallen out of a plane. He had lived on the edge and was, his luck had run out.
Birds appear, North Georgia. The view travels along a sun-dappled forest trail. A black bear grazes in a grassy clearing.
With the body identified, police trace Thornton's flight path all the way back to North Georgia.
We started receiving more information that there was more cocaine that had been dumped along the way of his journey.
Michael York.
The duffel bag Drew Thornton had strapped to his body when he died was of the same make, color, and type that they found close to the bear in Georgia.
The incredible story is quickly picked up by the TV networks.
The medical examiner says the bear had been dead for at least 6 weeks. GBI agents recovered none of the cocaine. They say it could have been blown away by the wind or simply dissolved. One thing's for sure, the bear did not eat 75 pounds of the stuff.
We believe that the duffel bag that was found in Fannin County next to the bear also had 75 pounds of cocaine. When we found it, there was no cocaine. There was 75 pounds found with Andrew Thornton in a similar duffel bag when he jumped to his death.
An officer searches the body.
So who really is Andrew Thornton? And how is he connected to the cocaine bear? To find answers, we need to go back decades to the heartland of Kentucky's Blue Blood Society.
Birds appear, Lexington, Kentucky. Horses graze in a paddock nearby a majestic column-fronted stately home. While leaning on a cane, Ron Bryant sits in an opulent drawing room.
My name is Ron Bryant. I was historian for the Kentucky State Park System and director of Waveland State Historic Site. My family has been in Kentucky for over 200 years.
Kentucky historian Ron Bryant is a distant relative of Daniel Boone. He knows Kentucky.
There's always old jokes in Kentucky about everyone being related to each other. Well, in some cases, the gene pool was rather shallow, I've got to admit.
A family photo of a teenaged Andrew.
But not with Andrew Thornton. Andrew was a child of privilege. None of this should have ever happened according to the way he was raised. When the news came that Andrew Thornton had died and how he died, society was not only in a state of shock, it was in a state of absolute shock.
A photo of two young men.
Andrew Thornton II was the son of Andrew Carter Thornton. The Thorntons had established themselves in the horse industry, and they knew their horses. And they, in fact, had at least two Derby winners. That's quite a feather in anybody's cap right there.
Bronze statues capture a horse race in motion beside a sign which reads Thoroughbred Park.
Andrew Thornton, he certainly had the breeding. It's funny to use the word breeding for someone from Lexington, Kentucky, because that never, hardly ever talks about people. It's only about horses. But he really did have the breeding. Andrew Thornton entered the University of Kentucky, but his heart wasn't in it. So he left the University of Kentucky after a short period of time and volunteered for combat.
Fighter planes in formation, a photo of Andrew in uniform.
He went into the Army, actually won a Purple Heart, and he particularly liked flying and parachuting.
An Air Force parachute training exercise, airmen form a queue before jumping from the plane.
In 1968, Thornton returns home a hero and gets married, but it doesn't last. This man of action is looking for his next thrill.
He wanted something that was not staid and safe. He wanted something that was, shall we say, nearly dangerous.
After having a very distinguished military career, he came back and he joined the police department.
Thornton liked the idea of being a police officer because that was an adventuresome life.
A suited man sits down.
My name is Jim Huggins. I was a supervisory special agent for the FBI in Lexington, Kentucky from 1986 to 1995 when I retired. I worked very closely with the Kentucky State Police Intelligence Bureau.
Archive footage of a car passing through Lexington City.
the 70s at that time, there was a lot of drug activity starting to show up, particularly around the college campus area. It was becoming a major crime problem for the local law enforcement agencies at that time.
The Lexington Police Department creates its first narcotics squad. And the promise of action is a huge draw for the young Andrew Thornton.
He volunteered for the narcotics unit. His best friend, Bill Conan, was already working there. Bill Conan came from a much different background than Drew Thornton. His family was working class.
Drew Thornton likes the fact that Bill Conan is a tough guy. As a pair, they're made for trouble.
At night, hooded figures smoke in a dark alley.
They were trying to infiltrate student groups out at the University of Kentucky, and they would hang out in bars and dress like a regular student. They also were accusations that they would arrest a drug dealer, confiscate his drugs, and then instead of turning them into the evidence locker like they should have, they'd keep them for themselves. There were allegations that they did, in fact, resell some of the drugs.
It wasn't too big a leap for someone in a new narcotics squad to think that maybe if they just held back a little bit of what they had confiscated and then turned it back out on the streets that they could increase their income.
But why would a wealthy member of the Lexington elite stoop to stealing drugs?
Nobody really, really, really knew what Andrew Thornton was doing. There had been rumors that were going around that something was bad wrong with Andrew.
For Thornton, it may not have been simply just to get some extra money. It may have been to do something that other people couldn't do or wouldn't do. It would go along with his whole soldier of fortune lifestyle that he cultivated.
That would be his downfall, changing him from a pillar of society into a pariah in society.
The charmed life of Drew Thornton is about to get darker on the way to a rendezvous with the cocaine bear.
A black bear surveys the clearing and the screen cuts to black. Aerial footage of a fast-flowing river through a thick forest.
In 1975, the cocaine bear was just a cub, learning the bear way of life in the woods of Georgia.
Footage of a cub in a tree. Words appear. Lexington, 1975.
Meanwhile, more than 200 miles away in Lexington, Kentucky, Drew Thornton is relishing his role as a dirty cop with his tough guy partner, Bill Conan. A world away from his respectable upbringing in Kentucky horse breeding society.
I think Andrew Thornton was one of these types of individuals that's grown up with a silver spoon and they've gotten just about anything they wanted. So to have this kind of thrill is something that excites them. He was a bad dude.
I don't think Andrew Thornton was rebelling against his position in society. I think Andrew Thornton wanted a different type of life. That's all it was. He saw himself as being an adventurer, a person that literally lived on the edge.
Thornton helped create the myth of Drew Thornton. He tried to build an image of himself that was the Superman, but it went beyond what he was really capable of.
Always a show-off, Thornton liked to demonstrate his athletic arrest techniques to his buddies in the police department.
And so he tried to jump over a car, and at the same time he was wearing a weapon. And the weapon went off and it ricocheted and shot him.
Ron cackles.
It does no more than graze his leg and his ego. But that doesn't stop him from escalating his game from street dealing to flying illegal drugs into Kentucky.
I've been a pilot for over 40 years, and then later I became an aviation writer and photographer.
Charles climbs into a cockpit.
I think one of the most fascinating stories you'll find in drug smuggling is the story of Drew Thornton.
At the Bluegrass Airport, a control tower scans the airbase.
There's a personality type who looks for a way to make life bigger. Sometime in the mid-70s, Drew Thornton decided to move beyond street-level crime and become a smuggler.
Drew was primarily bringing really plane loads of marijuana into Kentucky for distribution throughout the state. I mean, this was a big thing.
They had devised a plan that worked well. All they did was go get it, transport it back, cut out the middleman. I would have never imagined that this was happening.
Through their contacts in the Lexington drug scene, dirty cops Andrew Thornton and Bill Canaan establish a network of out-of-state wholesalers who supply them with larger quantities of pot.
Thornton would be coming in on the weekend when a lot of recreational flyers would be coming back in, so the radar scopes would be full of airplanes. And you could easily unload your luggage into a car, hit up the highway, and you're done.
Drew Thornton flew in many, many loads of marijuana. He was making a substantial amount of money.
Two men examine a drug brick in a parking lot.
As 1976 draws to a close, life is good for the cocaine bear. But 200 miles away, things are about to get complicated for our pair of dirty cops.
Words appear, Lexington, Kentucky, January 1977.
In the late 70s, when the narcotics squad in Lexington was cultivating people who could become informants, one of those people was Melanie Flynn.
Melanie Flynn met Bill Canaan, who was trying to use her as an informant. She was furnishing them with information about drug users and purchasers around the University of Kentucky.
Melanie, by all accounts, was just helping out the local cops. She felt like this was the right thing to do.
Melanie doesn't know she's working with crooked cops. But soon she begins to suspect that the drugs circulating in Lexington are being supplied by Drew Thornton and Bill Canaan.
And I think they became concerned that she may be a threat to their operations and would go to the authorities and cause them some major problems.
She leaves work one day and is going home and is never seen again.
Melanie's photo and name are crossed out.
Her car was later found abandoned in an apartment complex on the north side of Lexington. She was last seen about two blocks away, parked at an intersection, talking to two people in a dark van. And investigation later by Kentucky State Police, there was some belief that maybe those two individuals had been Drew Thornton and Bill Canaan.
Carrying a tan handbag, Melanie climbs into a van.
When you go from drug smuggling and you escalate to a crime of murder, that's really taking it to a whole other level. And that has not been proven yet. However, Melanie Flynn is still missing.
An unseen man closes the van door and the screen fades to black. Aerial footage of a broad river. In the long grass, a figure rifles through Melanie's bag.
After Melanie Flynn's disappearance, a pocketbook that she was carrying was found by a fisherman in the Kentucky River. And in that were some medications that were hers.
Melanie Flynn is probably one of the most tragic characters in all of this. To this day, we don't know what really happened to her. And the rumor mill was running very, very much.
One rumor is that Drew Thornton is the subject of an internal affairs investigation. He quits the police. Now he's free to move into full-time smuggling.
A plane soars over mountains and a winding river. An eagle beats its wings as it takes off. A bear scratches its back against a tree.
In the woods of North Georgia, an innocent bear has no idea that there's a man 200 miles away plotting something so huge that their worlds will one day collide.
I have heard many people say, in talking about Andrew Thornton, they would relate him to the myth of Icarus, flying too close to the sun, and that's exactly what he did.
By 1977, Drew Thornton is no longer a cop and can now expand his drug smuggling business with no one looking over his shoulder.
He thought of himself as smarter than everybody else, had no fear, and he would push that envelope where many people wouldn't do that.
Rick Saunders.
The only way for Thornton to go big is to find new partners. He turns to an old friend from Lexington, a man named Bradley Bryant.
Bradley Bryant was a childhood school friend of Drew Thornton. They went to the same private school in Lexington, and they both went to the military academy, so they had a long history.
Bryant was even Thornton's best man at his wedding. They were the salt of the earth. They were the bastions of society.
A smiling photo of Bryant.
Bradley Bryant isn't just an old buddy of Thornton's. He's a successful businessman with links to organized crime all over the country. And he wants to be a player in Sin City.
Words appear, Las Vegas, Nevada. A casino neon sign flashes brightly.
Bradley Bryant went to Las Vegas and he met the Chagra brothers, Lee and Jimmy Chagra.
Photo of two mustachioed men.
The Chagras were major, major players in the drug business. They had connections in South America, Mexico, Colombia.
Jimmy and Lee Chagra would allow Drew Thornton to import larger amounts of marijuana.
Footage of two businessmen drinking champagne.
Andrew wasn't afraid to go to South America and risk his life doing it, but I think that was part of the attraction for him.
Words appear, Colombia. Unseen figures load some cargo.
If you're going to bring in tons of marijuana, you're going to need an airplane capable of hauling that.
Drew Thornton was flying a four-engine cargo aircraft, a World War II plane, that was able to carry tons of marijuana into Kentucky.
Thornton's route takes him from South America up the coast of Florida and over North Georgia, the home territory of the cocaine bear.
He was bringing in what's estimated to be 10,000 pounds, 5 tons of marijuana.
In today's money, that's $5 million.
These are Kentucky blue bloods that got together to go into full-time smuggling and were pretty successful at it.
People don't understand what a process it would be to fly into a foreign country with a load of drugs coming back to the United States of America. That takes a unique individual.
They quickly ratcheted up their business, becoming a major organization in the Southeast, maybe the biggest at that time.
I mean, it was unbelievable.
At night, mist blankets the forest while some animals graze in a tree.
Drew Thornton and Bradley Bryant are raking in the cash on their way to the top of the drug smuggling food chain.
Climbing some grass, a frog falls.
But they're so busy living the high life, they ignore the warning signs that it's about to all come crashing down.
An owl stares fixedly ahead, December 1978 in Las Vegas.
In 1978, Lee Chagra was assassinated in his office. The suspicion was, obviously, that it was a retaliation for some crime that had gone bad.
Lee Chagra's death brings unwanted police attention for Thornton. Within months, Jimmy Chagra is arrested for drug trafficking. And this sets into motion a bizarre series of events that will send Thornton's life into freefall.
Jimmy Chagra was to go on trial for his criminal activities. That trial that would be under the supervision of Judge John Wood. It was often known as Maximum John for the sentences he would hand out. The day before the trial was scheduled to start, Judge Wood was assassinated in his driveway.
TV footage of paramedics performing CPR.
Judge John Wood was fatally wounded by a single gunshot as he was getting in his car this morning. Emergency attendants worked on the judge but could not revive him.
Police officers mill about as paramedics carry the body away.
John Wood was assassinated by a hitman hired by Jimmy Chagra.
It's hard to imagine what Thornton's associate was thinking when he ordered the hit.
It didn't make a lot of sense in many, many ways. It just simply wasn't done. People just didn't do things like that.
Perhaps it was scare tactics. but it didn't work. Jimmy Chagra went down for 30 years. But that's not the strangest twist in this assassination.
Chagra had hired a gentleman named Charles Harrelson.
If the name Charles Harrelson is familiar, it's because the hitman has a Hollywood connection. He's the father of actor Woody Harrelson.
A newspaper headline reads, "Tough SA jurist shot on parking lot."
The Wood killing was international news. Everybody in law enforcement in the United States knew about it. That was a line that had not been crossed.
A lot of attention was on anything that had to do with the Chagra brothers, including Drew Thornton.
Suddenly, Drew Thornton of little old Lexington, Kentucky, is on the radar of the FBI. There's nowhere left to hide.
A sign reads, J. Edgar Hoover, FBI building. Accompanied by two officers, Fran scours the forest.
The cocaine bear was the second case that was worked in Georgia where an animal had come to its demise from cocaine. In September of 1982, the sheriff's office had called and said a farmer had found a blue canister cylinder in his pasture with his cows. And his cows had gotten into the cylinder. And I said, "Are you crazy?" The cows had white powder all over their noses.
Fran Gerns, a close-up of a cow sticking out its tongue.
There's something going on here.
But where did the cows get their cocaine?
A parachute dead drop.
Could it be the same supplier to our legendary bear? But back in 1980, Drew Thornton isn't a cocaine smuggler. He's running marijuana. And lots of it.
A plane lands.
After the murder of a federal judge, Thornton becomes a person of interest for the FBI.
We got notified immediately from FBI headquarters that a federal judge had been murdered and there might be a person in Lexington involved in that.
The FBI has the killer and the man who ordered the hit. Now they're shaking down all of his criminal contacts. But despite the heat, Thornton and his old buddy Bradley Bryant are still smuggling.
Thornton was living a very, very good life, and Bryant was after the money. So they gambled, and that's an old Kentucky vice, of course. They gambled, and they lost big time.
A commercial plane flies over a sign which reads Philadelphia International Airport.
In 1981, at a hotel at the Philadelphia Airport, Bradley Bryant's luck ran out. He was arrested with a huge supply of automatic weapons, night vision goggles, and sophisticated communication gear, something that one federal agent told me looked a lot like a complicated assassination kit.
Another weapons stash is discovered by the feds in a Lexington warehouse owned by Bryant.
Photos of a gun and ammo cache.
He's sentenced to 15 years in jail. And there's bad news for the drug operation's star pilot. Hidden among the weapons is a notebook. Written inside is the name Andrew Thornton, along with code words for marijuana smuggling missions.
Thornton became fearful for the attention that was going to come to bear on him.
He immediately dropped out of sight. It turned out that he was on the run, and he was still up to his old tricks, flying his airplanes.
For months, Thornton flies from airport to airport.
A wolf pack howls.
Staying under the radar and avoiding capture.
Thornton liked the idea of risk. He loved excitement. He loved adventure. He would have enjoyed that immensely.
A bear glances up as a plane crosses overhead.
He landed at an airport in North Carolina, and customs officials were intercepting his communication and tracking his flights. And that's where they got him.
Officers push a suspect against an aircraft and handcuff him.
But he wasn't caught with drugs.
Thornton's plane is completely clean. Someone could have tipped him off, or he just got lucky.
Thornton was a very, very, very lucky man in many, many ways.
The evidence against him is thin.
Footage of a handcuffed Andrew entering a courtroom. With a bored expression, Andrew attends his trial.
Thornton gets off easy and only serves 5 months. With all his friends in prison, Thornton's marijuana empire has collapsed. But he's not ready to give up just yet.
That's when Drew Thornton became the lone wolf. He used what connections he had to start bringing in cocaine, which changed everything.
Archive footage of shirtless men and scantily clad women smoking joints at a music festival.
In the 70s, there was a huge appetite for marijuana in the United States. But then in the 80s, the appetite shifted to cocaine.
It became the drug of choice. A lot of celebrities were using it. And it was attractive for the smugglers.
I joined DEA in 1983. I was assigned to working drug cases throughout Kentucky. That took me to South America. Once I joined DEA, I learned a lot about Andrew Thornton. Andrew went from flying tons of marijuana to flying kilos of cocaine because it took a much smaller airplane, which was less noticeable by law enforcement.
You could make 10 times the amount of money easily on a run that you would with marijuana. And a pilot like Drew Thornton could do everything on his own.
At dusk, an armed guard patrols an aircraft.
By 1983, Thornton's using his connections in Colombia to smuggle cocaine into America.
I knew that he was a major drug smuggler. And several agencies were working to build a case against Andrew Thornton.
He's now set for the flight that will make him infamous and forever connected to the fate of the cocaine bear.
At night, a prop plane bucks uneasily as it flies over the forest.
It's 1985, and Andrew Thornton is back in the big time, smuggling cocaine into Kentucky. But in the legend of the cocaine bear, his fate is sealed, and his end is fast approaching.
The silhouette of a plane passes over an eerie full moon.
On the night of September the 10th, 1985, he flew a load of cocaine into the United States from Colombia. His goal was to move cocaine into the Lexington area with an intermediate stop in Georgia, where he had some co-conspirators waiting to offload the airplane.
Well, you just don't get in a plane and fly to Colombia and pick up a load of cocaine and come back. This would have taken some serious prior planning.
Thornton's journey started as planned. He passed Cuba and navigated the coast of Florida without incident. But what happened next? There are certain facts upon which most investigators agree.
From the cockpit, city lights appear ahead.
Thornton did not make his landing in Georgia. He was flying over the National Forest in Georgia and started throwing out cocaine into the forest.
Probably worth hundreds of millions.
He attached the duffel bags to parachutes, pushed them out of the airplane, and then he had about 75 pounds of cocaine strapped to his body.
And then with the remaining cocaine strapped to him, he put the airplane on autopilot somewhere near the Knoxville downtown airport, jumped.
And then something happened that he didn't expect to happen.
A flash of yellow passes a window. Footage of Andrew's body lying in the gravel driveway. Paws appears on screen.
How did Andrew Thornton parachute to his death?
The footage rewinds.
People do have a number of different theories as to how this happened, why it went bad.
Words appear. Theory one, parachute predicament.
The most common story I heard was that the main chute did not fully open for unknown reasons. The reserve chute also did not fully inflate.
Words appear. Theory two, door dilemma.
People noted at the time that there was an obvious cut or bruise on his head, and so perhaps he hit his head, went out the door of the airplane. He was unconscious, didn't have an opportunity to pull his chute. It also may have had something to do with Thornton carrying all that cocaine on him.
Words appear. Theory three, cocaine headache.
From the injuries to his face, the medical examiner believed that load of cocaine had swung back around and caught him in the face and either knocked him out or addled him to where he was confused. You know, so it would be a pretty good lick.
But what compelled Thornton to jump out of the plane?
The word on the street was he felt like he was being surveilled by customs or DEA.
Four paranoia problems.
Somewhere along the way, he became paranoid that he was being followed or being tracked by a DEA plane or Coast Guard or customs.
A lot of people think he probably jumped out of the airplane because of his paranoia. But we checked and they did not have any aircraft following him into the United States.
If law enforcement wasn't on his tail, why jump at all?
Theory five, the sneaky scam.
I think that this was his plan all along.
One of the stories that was circulating was that he actually was ripping off the Colombian suppliers by intentionally crashing the airplane, claiming the cocaine was destroyed in the crash, but keeping it for himself.
Why would he have all those parachutes in the airplane tied to duffel bags full of cocaine if that wasn't the plan originally?
No, I don't think so. He was way too smart to steal from the Medellin cartel. They knew who he was. He would have not lasted very long at all if he had stolen from them.
Whether Thornton was scamming the cartels or just paranoid, there's one even more shocking theory about what happened that night.
One of the theories is that there was a second person on the airplane.
Words appear. Theory six, the second smuggler. Jimmy Jones scans the horizon.
We initially thought that other people were involved, but we didn't have any proof. This is a downtown Knoxville Island Home Airport, where Mr. Thornton parachuted into the residential area, is about 250 yards as the crow flies above us on the hill. About 2 or 3 months after Thornton was found, another parachute was found on the far end of the runway. We theorized that Andrew Thornton let the other individual in the plane jump, and then Thornton put the plane on autopilot. He would jump out of the plane and let it go across the mountains in North Carolina and crash.
If there was one other person on the plane, it would have to be someone that Drew Thornton trusted. And I don't know of anybody back then that he trusted more than Bill Canaan. Canaan was his very close friend who worked alongside him at the Lexington Police Department.
Was Thornton's old partner, corrupt cop Bill Canaan, with him at the very end?
Canaan was the most likely suspect. Until someone else came forward, also named Bill, who professed that he was on the plane.
Insider's account of Thornton's cocaine odyssey.
In 1990, a man named Bill Leonard told an amazing story to a journalist at the Knoxville News Sentinel.
A diagram depicts the journey.
Thornton had talked Bill Leonard into traveling with him to help provide security for him, but apparently Leonard thought that was going to be in Florida or the Bahamas. Thornton kept flying and they ended up in Colombia, surprising Bill Leonard.
You have to ask yourself how plausible that is, but you know, the Bill Leonard that I knew was a stand-up guy and you could believe him.
Leonard has never been charged with a crime, And I spoke to former detectives from Lexington who believe his story. They're convinced that he was an unwitting accomplice in that smuggling run. I don't know how you account for the fact that someone as experienced as Drew Thornton as a paratrooper did not survive that night, and the totally inexperienced Bill Leonard did. Pure luck, perhaps?
I've asked a number of the investigators, from the Federal Aviation to the FBI to the state police in Tennessee. Nobody has an answer.
Much of what happened in the skies over Knoxville remains a mystery. Can more answers be found in North Georgia? And what really happened to the cocaine bear?
At night, mist blankets the pine forest.
On Andrew Thornton's final flight in 1985, he drops several duffel bags full of cocaine over the southern United States.
There was a map that showed where the cocaine was found along the way, and you could just about track his line of flight where the packages were thrown out.
Words appear, North Georgia.
One lands in the woods that are the home of the cocaine bear.
One of the DEA agents called back and said, you know, that a bear got into that cocaine down there in the woods. And I was like, oh, come on. And at first I thought that, you know, that it was they were kind of gigging me a little bit, but actually it did happen.
Wearing a GBI police vest, Fran patrols the forest with two officers.
When Fran Wiley's officers get to the scene, there is no cocaine left. She has her own theory about what happened to it.
There was no cocaine in the duffel bag at the scene. So where did the cocaine go? Well, the bear ate it. Well, no, the bear didn't eat it. The bad guys got it. The bear would have never been able to consume 75 pounds of cocaine. The pathologist told me that it had consumed about 3 grams of cocaine that was 95% pure. And it would have been dead within the first or second bite. My theory is that Mr. Thornton had a predestined location for his ground crew to pick up the cocaine. And I think that they did. They probably saw the bear had got into it.
A man pokes the unconscious bear before collecting the drugs.
And they picked up the remaining and left.
A quirky blue warehouse with a sign that reads KY for KY, Kentucky Fun Mall. The mall sells kitsch t-shirts with slogans such as Cocaine Bear for President and Cocaine Bear, Don't Do Drugs, Y'all.
I've heard many variations of this story about the bear in Lexington, Kentucky that is on display. They are portraying it to be Pablo Escobar.
A sign beneath a taxidermied bear wearing a brimmed hat reads Cocaine Bear.
But that is not my bear. There's no way. The bear was in no condition to be taxidermied.
I think the purveyors of the display, if you press them, they would tell you that it's not the same bear. It's symbolic.
They claim that, quote, their taxidermy bear is 100% cocaine bear, unquote. And that, quote, if disbelief is your choice, then we created the most fantastic story ever, end quote.
With a disapproving expression, Fran's eyes dart about.
The whereabouts of the real cocaine bear is as mysterious as so much of this legend. This story began with reports of a dead parachutist found wearing Gucci loafers.
There were incorrect accounts as to what exactly he was wearing on his feet. There was one indication that he had Gucci loafers.
In reality, Thornton's shoes were described as the Gucci loafers of the parachuting world.
He had some very expensive jumping shoes on. when I was told about them, they were equated to Gucci. That's how they tried to correlate it to me, was this would be like Gucci. I don't think we'll ever know what really happened. I think we have gotten pretty close with the bits and pieces and the puzzles that we put together with the individuals that are still alive and the agencies that did the legwork that they did. I think we got as close to knowing what happened as we ever will.
A curtain was drawn over the conspiracy, the drugs, the murders. If I had to go to my grave with that on my conscience, I would not want to stand very tall on the day of judgment, is all I could say.
Bradley Bryant served his time and then dropped out of sight. Bill Canaan was jailed in 1994 for federal drug charges. He passed away in 2020. And as for Drew Thornton, his myth lives on, alongside that of the cocaine bear.
He was a bad guy. These guys did this stuff for fun, and that's kind of scary.
Thinking about Andrew Thornton and the cocaine bear, would have Thornton liked to have been associated with that? I think he would have thought the bear was getting more attention than he did, and I don't think he would have liked that whatsoever, but he probably would have been amused by it.
Credits appear directed by Robert Palumbo and narrated by Sharon Martin. Audio description written, read, and recorded by Hearsay AD for Take One.